Spritya Naran Chevanarotamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Vai
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 33, Chapter entitled The Rasa Dance, Text Number 29. Shishuka Uvacha Dharma
Dharma
Vyatikramo
Vyatikramo
Drishta
Drishta
Ishwaranam
Ishwaranam
Cha
Chaya
Sahasam
Sahasam
Tejiyasam
Tejiyasam
Na
Na
Doshaya
Doshaya
Vane Savabhujo
Savabhujo
Yata Shri Shuka Dhamma Vyati Kramo Drishta
Dhamma Vyati Kramo Drishta
Ishwaranam Chasahasam
Ishwaranam Chasahasam
Tejiyasam Nadoshaya
Tejiyasam Nadoshaya
Vane Sava Bujo Yata
Vane Sava Bujo Yata
Sri Shuka Uvacha
Sri Shuka Uvacha
Sri Shukadeva Goswami said
Sri Shukadeva Goswami said
Dharma Vyati Krama
Dharma Vyati Krama
The transgression of religious or moral principles
Transgression of religious or moral principles
Drishta
Drishta
Seen.
Seen.
Ishwaranam.
Ishwaranam.
Of powerful controllers.
Of powerful controllers.
Cha.
Cha.
Even.
Even.
Sahasam.
Sahasam.
Due to audacity.
Due to audacity.
Tejiyasam.
Tejiyasam.
Who are spiritually potent.
Spiritually potent.
Na.
Na.
Does not.
Does not.
Doshaya,
doshaya,
lead to any fault.
Lead to any fault.
Afane,
afane,
of fire.
Of fire.
Sarva,
sarva,
everything.
Everything.
Bhuja,
bhuja,
devouring.
Devouring.
Yatta,
yatta,
as.
As.
Translation of Prabhupada by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Shukadeva Goswami said, the status of powerful controllers is not harmed by any apparently audacious transgression of morality we may see in them. For they are just like fire, which devours everything fed into it and remains unpolluted. Translation responsibly. Shukadeva Goswami said, the status of powerful controllers,
the status of powerful controllers
is not harmed by any apparently audacious transgression.
Not harmed by any apparently audacious
of morality.
Of morality.
We may see in them.
We may see in them.
For they are just like fire.
They are just like fire.
Which devours everything fed into it.
Which devours everything fed into it.
And remains unpolluted.
Remains unpolluted.
Purport. Great potent personalities are not ruined by any apparent transgression of moral principles. Sridhar Swami mentions the examples of Brahma, Indra, Soma, Vishwamitra and others. A fire devours all that is fed into it, but the fire does not change its nature. Similarly, a great personality does not fall from his position by an irregularity in behavior. In the following verse, however, Shukadeva Goswami makes it clear that if we try to imitate the great personalities ruling the universe, the result will be catastrophic. Omigyan Timanandasya Gilanjana Shalakaya Chakshum Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhi Evacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasudevi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we see from the beginning of the Bhagavatam that when Parikshit Maharaj was sitting on the bank of the Ganga, or the Jamuna, near Delhi or Hastinapur, that at that time many great sages came to sit with him. Because they understood that a great event was about to take place. So they came from all over the universe to sit with Parikshit Maharaj at that time. And Parikshit Maharaj, he asked the assembled sages, what is the prime duty of every person at the end of their life? During their life, but especially at the end of their life. What should we focus upon? So, at that time, the sages gave different answers. And according to their particular path that they chose to follow, then they gave him different directions on what he should do at the end of life. Like that. And then, in the midst of Parikshit asking all the sages present what was these particular questions, then Sukadeva Goswami approached. And when the assembled sages saw Sukadeva Goswami, they could tell just by his physiognomy. It means he had the 32 symbols of a Mahapurush. A very great personality has 32 auspicious symbols on his body. Which make him, just by looking at him, you can tell this person is very auspicious. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has the 32 auspicious symptoms on his body, and I would expect that Prabhupada would also have. Some of them are like the forehead is very broad, like that, very deep forehead, like that. The ears are very large, like that. There are different symptoms. The arms, I think when they're held outstretched, I can't remember the exact, but there's like, according to the height of your body, when your arms are outstretched, there must be some balance there. The length should be the same. It might be from the neck to the down the bottom or something, but there's something like that. The hands are very large, like that. So these are the different symptoms. So they saw just by looking at Sukadeva Goswami, this personality was not an ordinary person. He was obviously a divine personality. So he walked into the assembly, and at the time he walked into the assembly, he was quite young, right? He was only like 16 or something like that. And the sages were like hundreds and thousands of years old, right? Narada was present. You read the list of who was present. It's like every great sage within the universe practically was at that assembly. And yet when they saw Sukadeva Goswami, most of them stood up in respect of this personality. Understanding just by looking at him and by his countenance, meaning his demeanor and his mood, they could understand that this personality was highly advanced in consciousness. So even though he was younger than most of them, most of them stood up and offered him great respect as he approached the assembly. So then he came towards the assembly and they offered him the Vyasasana, the seat of Vyas. And it's interesting because Vyas was actually present at the assembly. Vyas was actually sitting there. So you would imagine that they would ask Vyas to sit and speak. If someone's going to speak about Vedic knowledge, you would normally ask the Maha Muni, or the great sage himself, Vyasadeva. Or you would expect they would ask the guru of Vyas, who was Narada, who was also known as Maha Muni, who was also sitting there present. But they didn't ask Vyas or Narada, but instead they asked Sukadeva to please take the Vyasasana. So he took the Vyasasana, and it is mentioned by Sukadeva Goswami in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, by Yamaraj in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. There are 12 Mahajanas. Does anyone know any of the 12 Mahajanas? Mahajanas means great souls. Bhishma's mom. Bali Maharaj.
Brahma.
Kumaras. The Kumaras. Prahlad. We're not going to have breakfast until we get all 12s.
Janaka, Yama.
Janaka and Yama.
Shuka.
Shuka.
Shiva.
Shiva. Narada.
Manu.
Manu. Narada. And I think that's the 12. That's all. So out of the 12 Mahajans, out of all 12 of them, the person who has the highest realization or the deepest realization is Shukadeva. He's considered to be the most realized personality, even out of the Mahajanas. Now, why is that? Because in his constitutional position or his swarup, in terms of his relationship with Krishna, his God realization, he is Shuka, which means parrot. He is the parrot of Krishna. He's actually Krishna's parrot, or Radharani's parrot. Krishna's parrot, I think. So this means that in terms of his realizations of God, his realizations on the topmost level of consciousness. And he has the deepest understanding of God realization because he understands the pastimes that take place in Goloka Vrindavan. Right? And not just the pastimes that take place in Goloka Vrindavan, but the most intimate pastimes that take place in Goloka Vrindavan between Krishna and the gopis. And particularly the conjugal pastimes which are being spoken of in this section of the Bhagavatam, he is the most qualified person to be able to speak these pastimes. Right? There's no one else who could understand them or realize them more deeply or be more intimately united with these pastimes. So therefore he's considered to be the most highly qualified person to speak. So he is speaking these pastimes to Parikshit Maharaj. And while he is speaking to Parikshit Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj is looking around the temple, just like I'm looking around now, seeing some devotees falling asleep, and some devotees are very attentive, and some devotees are, their minds are obviously somewhere else, like that. So you can see just by looking around, everyone has like a different state of consciousness. Right? So Parikshit was also observing who was sitting in the audience and who was listening. And when the pastime was being spoken of Krishna with the gopis, right, which is conjugal, is male-female relationship. But it is the Adi Ras, it is the original relationship between male and females, it's not the perverted relationship. He noticed when he was looking around that even some of the sages there had peculiar looking faces. In other words, they were grinning a little bit, or they were imagining that there was some fault within Krishna for performing these particular pastimes. Right? So therefore they were thinking this is mundane. That the supreme, so-called supreme personality of Godhead himself has been contaminated by the modes of material nature, and he's engaging in ordinary lusty relationships with other people's wives. And this was their consciousness. So Parikshit was not in any doubt or confusion, because he was pure. He was an Amala Bhakta, which means his heart was pure. There was no confusion in his consciousness that Krishna was acting immorally. But he saw that others were thinking in this way. So then he asked this question to Shukadeva Goswami. How is it that this particular personality, who is the supreme personality of Godhead, who has come to earth to destroy irreligion? That's one of his purposes in, this is in verse 26 and 27, that one of his purposes in coming to earth is to destroy irreligious principles. So if he's come here to destroy irreligious principles, then why is he promoting irreligious principles? Right? This is contradictory behaviour. Why would the person who comes here, right, and speaks the Bhagavad Gita, and what does he say about sex in the Bhagavad Gita? It has to be dharmic. Right? It has to be according to religious principles. Right? He banishes a dharmic sex life within the Bhagavad Gita. So why would he speak Bhagavad Gita, right, and say sex life must be according to religious principles, and then he turns around here and then performs something else? That's totally contradictory. Right? So that means he has become overcome by the modes of material nature, if this is the case, if he's actually encouraging this kind of activity. So it cannot be that what is being performed here by Krishna with the gopis, it cannot be mundane. Right? It can't be. Because if it is, then Krishna loses his position as being amala, or pure, or shuddha, situated in vishuddha sattva, which means pure goodness. Right? That means he becomes contaminated by the modes of material nature. And if he's contaminated by the modes of material nature, it means he's no longer God. And if he's no longer God, as Prabhupada points out in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita doesn't mean anything. Right? There's no point to the whole Bhagavad Gita anymore. You know, the Bhagavad Gita, you can just put it on the shelf with any other book, right? With the Woman's Weekly and the, you know, whatever category you want to put it in. And it becomes as relevant as one of these books. Like I was saying a couple of weeks ago, my brother had a baby. So, well, he didn't have a baby, but his wife had a baby. He's a pretty far out guy, but I don't think he'd have a baby. I went to the hospital and I had to stay up till 4 a.m, waiting for the child to be delivered. I wish they could plan this, family planning things could be a little bit more organised so the child could be born during the day so we could get some sleep, but that's life. It takes place like that. I hope he's not listening to this lecture on the internet. I was there at 4 o'clock in the morning and starting to lose track of my brain. So I picked up one of the magazines, the girls' magazines on the table, and I was flicking through. And there was nothing of substance within that magazine at all. Like, nothing of substance. There was nothing of relevance, right, to human life within that, you know. Except you could dovetail in Krishna's service, because Prabhupada points out that at festivals, just like we had Janmashtami and so forth recently, it is very auspicious for the Matajis to dress beautifully. That is auspicious, right? They should wear mascara, they should wear jewels, they should wear nice silken cloth, they should decorate their hair with flowers and so forth. That creates an atmosphere of auspiciousness. That's wanted. So possibly you could read one of these magazines and get some tips on how to how to put mascara on or something, I could imagine. That's about as close as you could dovetail it. Otherwise, it's just total garbage. So if Krishna is affected by the three modes of material nature, then everything that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita becomes as relevant as that. But obviously, when you read the Bhagavad Gita, it is not a binding literature, it is a liberating literature. When one studies the Bhagavad Gita very carefully, what happens to one's consciousness? It becomes liberated from matter. When one reads the Women's Weekly, what happens to one's consciousness? It becomes bound by matter, right? It further deepens your attachment to the material energy. Whereas when you read the Bhagavad Gita, the natural result that we perceive in our consciousness is that we become elevated beyond the modes of material nature, or elevated gradually beyond the modes of material nature. So that is the potency of Krishna's speech. So therefore, Pariksit Maharaj is asking all the sages present, he's saying, so what is going on here? Is it that, Pariksit is asking Shukadeva Goswami, what is taking place? The Lord is coming in this world to destroy irreligion, and it appears he is acting irreligiously. So the acharyas go to great lengths within these purports of this particular pastime to point out that there is nothing irreligious about Krishna's behaviour. Right? What are some of the arguments they use to prove that this particular pastime of Krishna dancing with the gopis is not irreligious? Yes, sir.
His age is before puberty.
His age is before puberty. How old is Krishna at this point in time? Eight. So Krishna is around about 8 years old at this point in time. 8-year-old boys and girls in a normal civilization do not display lust. You don't find children displaying lust at the age of 8 and so forth. Although it is becoming, because of the influence of Kali Yuga, these things are, Kali Yuga is degrading and children are also becoming lusty and developing bad habits at a younger age. But normally, children would not be behaving lustfully at the age of 8. Krishna is only 8 years old, and yet he's performing these pastimes with the gopis. Right? So therefore the acharyas point out, for that reason, to begin with, this cannot be irreligious activity, or it cannot be a lustful relationship between boys and girls. The acharyas also point out that a very auspicious person within Vedic culture, he ages 1.5 times according to his actual age. So that means when Krishna is at the age of 10, which is just slightly beyond this pastime, Krishna would appear to be 15, right, according to his physiognomy or his physical stature. He would appear to be 15, but his age is actually 10. So that means that the acharyas explain a very auspicious person will appear 1.5 times older than what he is as he's growing up, like that. So Krishna, while he's performing Rasa Leela, he might only be 10 years old, but he appears 15. That means he's already in Kaishora in terms of the way he looks. He always looks like he already looks 15, and he's already behaving like a 15-year-old. Right? Because 15-year-olds will do this. They will go off with their girlfriends and dance. Right? 8 or 10-year-olds won't do that. They won't go off with girls and dance. They don't even like girls. Right? When you're 8 or 10, you don't like girls. I remember when I was 8 or 10, it was like, you know, the girls around, it was like, you know, you're wrecking our fun, you know, why don't you go and play somewhere else? You know, like that. There was no interest in girls, right? But when you're 15, totally different. Right? All you can think about is girls. Right? And all girls can think about is boys. Right? All day, all night, that's all you think about. But when you're 10, it's totally different. Or when you're 8, it's totally different. So Krishna was physically appearing to be older, but in terms of his age, he was not that. So this cannot be lust. What other reasons do they give the acharyas why this cannot be a mundane? Krishna is the husband of everyone. Right? So he is the Adi Purush, he is the Maha Purush, he is the original personality of Godhead. Right? And it is explained that all the jivas are Prakriti. This is the statement of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita has five principal subject matters. Right? What are the five principal matters which are spoken of in Bhagavad Gita?
Kala,
Ishvara, Prakriti,
Karma,
Kala, Karma, and Jiva, like that. So these are the five principal subject matters. So the acharyas point out that Krishna is the husband of every one of us. It's like sometimes you ask someone, who is your husband? Right? Or who is your wife? And you'll say, oh, this Prabhu or this Mataji is my wife, this one is my husband, like that. And then you take birth, all the men take birth in the next life, hypothetically, we may take birth as women, and then we'll say, oh, this is my husband. Right? The statement is false. It is asat. Nasato vijite bhavo, na bhavo vijite sataha. Krishna says within the second chapter of the Gita, sages have concluded the nature of matter is that it is temporary. Right? It has no endurance. And the nature of spirit is that it has no cessation. Right? Spirit is eternal and matter is temporary. So any material relationship that we have in this material world is, if it's based on the body, it is temporary. Husband and wives are only married for a few years in eternity. It's not a very long thing. Although we make it a very big deal of it. Actually, it's a very short time that we're actually together in terms of eternity. Right? And all these relationships in this material world, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says they are just names. It is just a relationship based on names. Right? And just like I was listening to the radio the other day, and they're debating on the radio. It's quite funny what the non-devotees debate about. I suppose they've got nothing else to talk about all day, so they just think up really strange things to debate about. So the debate was, in our high schools at this point in time, by the time the children graduate from high school, which is when you're about 17, 18, they don't know enough about Australian history. In other words, they can't name many of the prime ministers in Australia for the last 100 years. So this is a big debate. You know, we should come out of high school and we should know the names of some of the prime ministers in the last 100 years. Very important. Yeah, especially at the time of death, this is going to be very relevant. You know, you're really going to have to know John Howard's name at the time of death. You know, Johnny, save me, Johnny, Howard, Johnny, like that. It's irrelevant information. It doesn't actually have any bearing on the soul. So the Bhagavad Gita describes that these relationships in the material world are just based on names, simply. Right? We say, oh, this is husband, this is wife, this is child, this is brother, this is sister, like that. But we should not take them to be eternal relationships. They're just temporary relationships. Whereas the soul's relationship with Krishna is an eternal relationship. Jivera Srupa Hoy Krishnera Nitya Das. What does Nitya Das mean? Right? Eternally the servant of Krishna. Right? So this relationship with Krishna is eternal. And the Acharyas point out, because all of us are Prakriti. What does Prakriti mean? Feminine. Yeah, it does mean feminine. Yeah. Enjoyed. That which is enjoyed. Right? So, in this material world, everyone is to, or in creation, all souls are meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. Right? He is the only Purush. He is the Adi Purush. He is the Maha Purush. He is the only enjoyer. He is the greatest enjoyer. He is the original enjoyer. So therefore, all of us are simply meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. So this cannot be irreligious behavior, because the gopis are meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. And they're too young to have lust within their consciousness. So it's obviously not an ordinary event. It's obviously not an ordinary pastime between girls and boys in this world. Right? It is transcendental. Right? So therefore, Rupa Goswami points out it is called Kama Rupa. What does Kama Rupa mean? Yeah, Rupa means like form, Kama means lust. It appears to have the form of lust. Right? But it's not lust. It's a different feeling. Right? We all know what lust feels like very well in this material world. It consumes our consciousness. Right? So what does lust feel like?
To enjoy.
To enjoy. It means it is for my sensual pleasure. Right? And it's a very selfish state of consciousness. And how does it make you, does it satisfy your heart? Does it make your heart feel peaceful?
It makes it burn.
Krishna says himself in the Bhagavad Gita, it makes you burn, right? You don't find peace. Because for devotees, we're trying to give up these bad qualities, the six bad qualities. But sometimes, because of our previous conditioning, the bad qualities come back and lust consumes our consciousness. And we know when that happens, it feels very unpeaceful. Right? We don't feel satisfied in heart. We feel terrible. You feel polluted. You feel contaminated. And the proof is, because some people will argue to the devotees, for example, they'll say, all of you are brainwashed. Because you should be enjoying your senses. Right? And you're giving up sense enjoyment. Just like some of Prabhupada's godbrothers went to England, I think in the 1930s and so forth, to try to spread Krishna consciousness. And they came across one English lord who was interested in Vaishnavism and Krishna consciousness and Hinduism. And he said, can you make me a Brahmana? And they said, yes, we can make you a Brahmana. And he said, what do I need to do? And they said to him, then you have to give up eating meat, illicit sex, intoxication and gambling. And he said, that's impossible. Mm-hmm. Well, how could I do that? What is life for? Mm-hmm. So this is the nature of material consciousness, is that we want to enjoy our senses, right? But the nature of devotional consciousness is that we want to renounce sense gratification, right? Because we know that when we become too absorbed in lust, then the consciousness does not become more peaceful. Even though there is a philosophy which goes around, the materialists have this philosophy, the more you enjoy your senses, the more satisfied you will become. But it's not practically perceived. Just like the philosophy is that the more sex you have, the happier you will be. That's the philosophy, basically, of the material universe, right? The more sex you have, the happier you will be, right? So then just go down, 2 kilometres this way to Grey Street, St Kilda, right, where people are absorbed in sex life, right? And is that a very peaceful, happy, tranquil place? Right? What are the modes like in that place? Right? It's all dark, it's tamasic. It's just completely ignorant. And the people are not happy. Right? They do not feel inner peace or satisfaction. Right? So therefore, what Krishna is exchanging with the gopis is not material lust. Because material lust, right, it makes the consciousness very selfish and it makes you very dissatisfied. But what Krishna and the gopis are experiencing in their exchange, what appears to be lust, right, but is transcendental emotion, attraction between Krishna, who is the supreme male, and Srimati Radharani and the gopis, who are her expansions, who are the supreme personifications of God's feminine energy. The natural attraction between these two original creations of God, the masculine energy and the feminine energy, it is effulgent. Right? It is not dark and tamasic. You don't see any light coming out of St Kilda. Right? It's just dark and tamasic. It's horrible. Right? But this is effulgent. Right? Krishna himself is effulgent. So it's nothing to do with the modes of material nature. Right? It's the most delightful, beautiful pastimes of God and his pure devotees. But it may appear to be lust. Right? So therefore, Pariksha Maharaj is saying to Shukadev, what is going on here? Is this actually a mundane relationship between mundane men and women? Is it actually irreligious? Right? But Shukadev is going to assure Pariksit and all the sages there that this is not adharma. It is not irreligious behaviour. And in this verse it says, the status of powerful controllers is not harmed by any apparently audacious transgressions of morality we may see in them. For they are just like fire, which devours everything fed into it and remains unpolluted. So if a great personality, right, it says here, those who are powerful controllers, who are we talking about?
Shiva.
Powerful controllers. Right? Who's the most powerful controller on this planet right now?
Krishna.
There's 6 billion of us. Who's number one? Who's got the most power right now?
George Bush.
George Bush. Right? He's got the most power right now. Right? You know, but he's not a very great controller. Actually, he doesn't have a control of a hell of a lot at all, right? Someone who has a lot more control than him, who is mentioned here, is Indra. Indra has a lot more control than George Bush, right? George Bush is irrelevant compared to Indra, right? Irrelevant in terms of potency, irrelevant. Even in this day and age we live in, we have the threat of nuclear destruction. Right? There's something like 30 or 40,000 nuclear warheads on Earth at the moment. Right? That's a lot of nuclear power. Right? They could just blow the Earth to smithereens, the surface of the globe to smithereens if they wanted to. Right? But then they were asking Prabhupada about, you know, the threat of nuclear war, and Prabhupada said there's no threat. In one conversation, he said there's no threat. He said that as the nuclear rockets are shooting, say, for example, from Russia to America, he said the demigods could intercept them in outer space as they were going over, and Indra could just grab them, like in mid-air, and just throw them out into space like that. That's it. There's no problem with nuclear weapons. That's the potency of someone like Indra. Now, Indra, if you compare him, he's a powerful controller, but if you compare him to someone like Shiva, his potency is insignificant. Right? There's one pastime in the Mahabharata where Lord Indra is wandering along the celestial Ganges, and he sees this beautiful golden, like made of pure gold, lotus flowers floating down the Ganges. Right? One after another. Right? They're just floating down the Ganges. Beautiful golden lotus flowers. So then Indra thinks, where is this coming from? So he begins to walk up the Ganges further and further and further, and then he gets to one, and he comes like around the corner, and then there's a little grove there, and there's one beautiful golden boy, one beautiful male, and he is sitting there with girls, very beautiful girls, who are also golden in complexion, and he's playing dice with them, just playing dice, just rolling the dice, and they're all laughing and playing, you know, just rolling the dice like this. Krishna and Radharani also have dice games like that. They play guys, they gamble against each other. So this boy is gambling with the girls, and Indra, you know, it's Indra, it's like the king of heaven. So he walks there and he says, who are you? And the boy doesn't even look at him. You know, he just keeps playing the games, you know, they're laughing like this, right? And Indra becomes angry. He says, who are you? Right? recognizing so Indra becomes angry and he begins to walk towards him, physically grab him, and the boy just looks at him and Indra becomes frozen like that, and Indra's just like, who is this person? You know, who is this? You know, he's just looked at me and I'm Indra and I can't move, right? And Indra, maybe his mouth could move or something, he said, who are you? And he said, my name is Shiva. Lord Shiva was taking his form and performing this pastime. So Lord Shiva is powerful. He is called Mahadev, right? So Lord Shiva may do things which appear to be irreligious, right? Just like it is described sometimes that Lord Shiva might smoke ganja, marijuana. But Lord Shiva is not affected by it, right? And the reason he may do these things is because one of his names is Tamasi, which means he is the Lord of the mode of ignorance. And his associates are in the mode of ignorance. Right? It describes the ghosts, hobgoblins, like tamasic creatures. They associate with him. And they go to him and they think, oh, Lord Shiva's cool because he smokes pot. Right? So they all go to associate with Shiva, but they get something far superior than becoming intoxicated, right? By the association of Shiva, they become Krishna conscious because he preaches to them, right? And he elevates their consciousness, right? By his divine personality. So then the Acharyas point out this important point that if you want to follow the example of personalities like Lord Shiva and may externally appear to be an irreligious activity, then you have to do some of the other things that he does as well, right? Like drink oceans of poison. Right? This is what Prabhupada says. He says, if you can drink the ocean of poison, then you can also smoke the marijuana. But if you can't drink an ocean of poison, then you cannot smoke the marijuana. Right? It is not permitted. Right? It is adharma, or it is irreligious, like that. So the Acharyas point out, if Indra is allowed to do things that we may not be allowed to do, if Shiva is allowed to do things that we're not allowed to do, what to speak of Krishna may be doing things that we're not allowed to do. But you have to understand who Krishna is. Right? Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He is the original God. He is internal pleasure potency. If he wants to enter relationships in the dead of night with other people's wives in the forest of Vrindavan, with his internal potency, that's his prerogative. He's allowed to do that. No one can challenge him. You can't challenge him. Indra tried to challenge him, and look what happened. Right? Brahma tried to play a trick on Krishna, and look what happened. Right? Shiva was giving out curses. Shiva was giving out benedictions, and then he got into trouble, and he had to go back to Krishna to save him. Right? So Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He is the original personality. And if he chooses to do these things, they cannot be challenged. And the point the Acharyas point out, you cannot follow. Right? Don't try to do what Krishna can do. In other words, don't go out and start your own Rasa Lila. Right? That means Govardhan Hill. It doesn't mean one Sheila. The Sheila is not different from Giriraj, so I lived at Govardhan Hill, so now I can go and have Rasa Lila. Right? No, it does not mean that. It means Govardhan Hill. It means lifting it. And it doesn't just mean lifting it. It means lifting it with the little finger of your left hand. Like, I can lift the mridanga, right? But if I try to lift mridanga with the little finger of my left hand, right, that hurts a lot, right? Now I've got to hold that for 7 days and seven nights, right? No hope, right? That's how much control we have in this world, right? Oh, we're so big. We can have Rasa Lila. Or we can even have one girl. Like that. We think, oh, I am so powerful. No. Then you do something impressive. No. You do what Krishna doesn't need to do. So therefore, we are known as Prakriti. Prakriti means we are to be in Krishna. And we should not attempt. The material world is the condition of the nature of the conditioned soul in the material world is called pramata. What does pramata mean?
Mad,
right? It means everyone in the material world is mad. Just like Prabhupada was driving in Sydney, and he drove past, what's that suburb called?
Paramatta.
Paramatta, right? So then Prabhupada saw it, and then what did Prabhupada say?
Paramatta.
Paramatta. Everyone here is mad. So this is the nature in the material world of everyone's consciousness. They are mad. Why are they mad? They want to enjoy, or actually they're trying to imitate Krishna. If you analyze what you're trying to do, material energy is trying to imitate Krishna. That's what the whole enjoying spirit is about. So until we understand that we're prakriti, means we're meant to be enjoyed by Krishna, we can't go into the spiritual world. You can't get Krishna's association. Because it would just become, if Krishna lets us back into the spiritual world right now, it'd be the equivalent of letting, like what happened in the Indra pastime. You know, Indra got all, you know, under the modes of nature, got all proud, and then he started to challenge Krishna. Right? So as soon as anyone has their consciousness, then Krishna puts them in the material world. Right? Material world's like, just like they've got that show on television called Super Nanny. Right? So Super Nanny, what she does if the kids are misbehaving, she puts them on the naughty mat. Right? When you behave, you can come off. Otherwise, stay on the naughty mat. Right? Very effective. So that's what the material world is. Right? All of you stay in this material world, right? And when you're good, then you come back to the spiritual world. No problem. Krishna wants us back there, right? There's no bar on us coming back. It's not that Krishna is saying, you know, I'm enjoying seeing all of you suffer. Right? This is how I get my kicks. I like to see all of you in pain, right, and suffering. How is old age? How is birth? How is disease? How is death? Krishna is not like that. He wants us to come back to the spiritual world. But there are, how do you say it?
Conditions.
Yeah, there are conditions. Right? You have to behave yourself. We have to learn to cooperate with Krishna. So when we get to that point, then we can actually take Krishna's mind and check one. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on the list.
In the previous verse that we read today, the specific wording of the translation is that Krishna is self-satisfied. So why? What did he have in mind when he did this? Because obviously he knew how it might be perceived. And what did he have in mind? Why did he actually do it in such a public forum? It ended up in public.
Yeah. There's a few reasons why. One understanding is that this is, as Prabhupada points out in the fourth chapter of Pachasam, Vinashaya Chatushkritam, Dharmasam Stapana, Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. So these are the three purposes of Krishna coming in the material world: to establish religion, to destroy the miscreants, and to deliver the pious. So Prabhupada points out in the purport, his main reason for coming is to deliver the pious. That's the main reason. And what does that mean? That means he performs his pastimes, which are the pure pastimes of the spiritual realm. He performs them in this material world to attract the conditioned souls back to him. So the Rasa Leela and these pastimes with the gopis, if one becomes a little purified in consciousness by devotional service, this will attract us back to Krishna. It is not meant to pollute the consciousness. It is meant to attract us back to Krishna. So that's why he's ultimately attracted back to him. Now, as you say, that some people want it, and some people will say, well, is he religious? Right? They'll perceive it like that. So for those people who do that, then that's a stumbling block or a stepping stone, which you have to overcome in order to take to the path of bhakti. Because the path of bhakti requires shraddha. It begins, ador shraddha, Rupa Goswami says that's where it begins. So it requires a leap of faith to become a devotee. Right? There's a certain amount of things you have to believe in or accept, which are very extraordinary. So when you hear about the Rasa Leela, it's a test of faith. Right? Do we see it as mundane, or do we see it that this is the Lord's internal pleasure pastimes? Because he does a lot of things that are very extraordinary, and that's why this is so important. So what's spoken about, because Shukadeva, as we're studying the Bhagavatam at the moment in the course, in the Bhaktivaibhava course, so Shukadeva begins to speak in the second canto. Now what's the first thing he begins to speak about?
Creation.
Pretty much, creation, right? So creation means there's this four-armed bluish personality laying on a thousand-hooded snake in a spiritual ocean which is so vast and massive that universes are coming out of his pores. when he is sleeping. When he exhales, the universes come out. When he inhales, the universes come in. And we're just in one of those universes right now. That's a leap of faith. Right? So if you believe that, if you accept that, it means you have faith in Krishna as there being a transcendental personality beyond the so ordinary conditioning like that. So if we can accept Krishna as Dwarka, right, then it'll make it much easier for us to accept these kind of pastimes. Because we understand this personality is not ordinary. Right? He's all-powerful personality. Even Brahma and Shiva are simply created by him. Right? So this is some of the reasons why. Is that okay? You want to add anything? You want to add anything?
I was thinking yesterday, I had a good class yesterday, and I came to the full conclusion in that verse where you say they come to deliver the devotees and know that due to being induced by the desire of the gopi, that was like is a higher concern for me.
It's not even like that. It's like Krishna's not even worried about what everyone thinks.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when he does Rasa Lila, he's not even thinking, oh, you know, they're all going to find this one really difficult, aren't they? You know, he doesn't even care.
Yeah.
Right? He's just absorbed in his pleasure pastimes with the gopis. And if we've got a problem with it, that's our problem.
Yeah.
It's not his problem. Krishna's not all mental, like, oh, you know. You know, maybe 3 billion is a bit too much. You know, yeah, 2 billion, 2 billion. 1.5. No, 3. Let's go 3. Well, that Krishna's not thinking about. Krishna's just enjoying unlimitedly. That's the point. Unlimited enjoyment. Right, what everyone wants? Unlimited enjoyment, right? But everyone wants to have a relationship with the opposite sex, right? This is what all the movies are about, right? Doesn't matter what movie it is, like King Kong or you know, I mean, what's King Kong about? It's about a gorilla, right? But there's this whole love affair going on in between. Yeah, what's it got to do with the gorilla? You think the gorilla, you know, he's like, you know, oh, that's it. That's the end of the love affair. Right? There's nothing actually involved. But the whole material world is based on this one thing, right? The attraction between the males and the females. But where's the unlimited enjoyment? Right? It's not unlimited enjoyment, right? It's a lot of putting up with the partners, whatever's going on there. Then little guy thrown in. That's what's going on. That's basically the relationship. Between Krishna and the gopis, it is unlimited enjoyment. It is unlimited. Right? That's why he has 3 billion gopis. One's not enough. Right? Two's not enough. 108 isn't enough. Right? Let's have 3 billion. Let's really enjoy. Right? Unlimited potency. And as the Acharyas are pointing out, if you go to Vrindavan, it's very dusty on the ground. Imagine 3 billion people dancing in dust. Right? It'd just be like a dust cloud. There's not one speck of dust in the air. That's unlimited potency and enjoyment. That's God. Right? So this is what we're dealing with. So he's not even caught. It's the problem of everyone in the material world.
He's not even making that calculation.
Yeah, he's not even calculating. But the point is that we are Krishna and we're Krishna. So for us, we must not, in public forums, Rasa Lila in public, with people who are not qualified to hear it. That's our, as preachers, because we represent Krishna. People don't walk into the Sunday feast lecture and you start talking, oh, this is the highest thing. You want to hear the highest thing? Okay, here it is, like that. We don't speak like that. Prabhupada says, the first thing you must understand is sambandha. Sambandha means the difference between matter and spirit. That's why Krishna begins like that in Bhagavad Gita. Ashochananda Sochastra. That's his first verse that he speaks. And what is the first letter of the first word in the first verse that he speaks? A. Right? And the Acharyas say, Asochan. A is the first letter in the Sanskrit alphabet also. Because you must begin from the beginning. Right? You will not understand Rasa Lila if you do not understand you're not your body. That's it. So that must be understood first.
Well, here in this verse it says that the person and the list is mentioned like Brahma and Radha. Chandra.
Yeah.
And when they transgress morality, that they remain unpolluted.
Mm-hmm.
But in history, we always find that they all suffer.
Mm.
They all have reaction to it.
Mm.
So So it seems to be like a contradiction here, like it says
it must be different, because in the commentary by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he says that even they do not get reactions like that. So as you're saying, they do suffer on certain occasions, but the examples we're giving here must be activities they perform where they don't get reactions. Right? For example, in Svat, in middle class, there are devas and the apsaras. The apsaras are the most beautiful girls, and the devas means the demigod. Now, Indra is married. His wife is...
Indra.
Indra? What's her name? Sati or...
Sachi.
So his wife is Sachi. So he's married. But it's not irreligious in Swarga for Indra to have sexual union with the apsaras. There's no reaction, there's no karma, because it's heaven. So he may transgress irreligion on this realm, and in Dharma, where Dharma is practiced here in the earthly realm. But on his realm, there's no reaction. Right? So therefore, it is not adharma. So I think that's some of the examples which are given. He may appear to be performing our dharma, but there's no reaction. Why? Because he's a controller. He's powerful. And you go up to Krishna. Right? And Krishna, as according to the Srimad Shukadeva Goswami, has already established, he is Swayam Bhagavan. So if he's Swayam Bhagavan, then there's certainly no irreligious reaction. He doesn't get any reaction for his behavior. He can do whatever he wants, and there's no reaction for his behavior. Just like we heard the past time on Baladev Purnim, Baladev cut off the head of Ramahashan Sutta. Right? There's no reaction for Balaram. He can do whatever he wants like that. But the sages said, because you're living amongst us, humans, please atone for your activity. Otherwise, everyone will start going around cutting everyone's head off, and you know it'll be accepted as being a normal activity. So for Krishna, there's nothing... and this is the point in this conversation. You know, this must be like day six or something. And it's like nearly halfway through the 10th count, so he's near the end. So he's probably on day six of the Bhagavatam, and these sages who are listening, some of them are still not understanding Krishna as the Supreme God, even though he said it right back on day one, Krishna's two Bhagavan Salam. He probably said it in the first half an hour that he's speaking, but everyone's still thinking that, you know, maybe he's not God. Any other questions or comments?
So you were saying about faith, you were receiving the description of the universe, the coming out of Mahavishnu. So I was just thinking that, you know, since Krishna wants unconditional love from us, that's the ultimate faith. So faith, unconditional love requires for to have a faith. That's what unconditional love means. If you want to be unconditional, you show the proof, then I will love you. That's the condition, that's the business now.
Because Rupa Goswami teaches that there are 9 levels of devotion: Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anatta Nivritti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prema. These are the 9 levels. So all of it, it's explained that all of it is just the development of Shraddha, that's all. Right? Not that that's all, but that's what it is, it's development of Shraddha. Shraddha in the beginning means you get a little bit of faith. Oh, the Sunday feast tastes good. Let me come next week. Right, that's the beginning of faith. Like, and then it gradually grows. But from Shraddha to Prema means just the faith is becoming more and more and more and more. And Prema means just everything for Krishna. Like holding Krishna surrendered to you. Whatever happens, you will take care of it. Just like last night, we had a program at Bhakti and Bhakti Prabhu's house. And instead of having like a class, then Bhakti Prabhu said, we'll just talk about our realizations. So everyone started talking about their pastimes of something that happened in their life that made them really develop their faith in Krishna more, that Krishna was looking after them. And we're hearing all devotees' pastimes, and we came to the conclusion that Krishna is fully looking after us. The problem is we don't accept that yet. But if we fully surrender to Krishna, he'll fully look after us. But we're still holding back, thinking, no, he's not going to, what if he doesn't look after me, or what if, like that.
Mm-hmm.
But actually he's fully... that we just have to develop. That's what it means to develop the faith higher and higher. Any other question or comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada.